It's workout.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning, in addition to our esteemed guest, is my good buddy, producer, and co-host, Mr. Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
How are you doing, Stone?
I am doing well, well rested. I went to Athens over the weekend and visited with Katie and
you helped the debt crisis over there.
I did. I helped the Athens economy, Athens, Georgia. I had a couple of fat tires, so I made my contribution. You know what a fat tire is?
No.
You're not a beer guy, are you?
No, I thought you said flat tire.
No, fat tire. So we thoroughly enjoyed that. We met the new roommate and we signed a lease for next year's apartment. So. College dad is in
So she's committing to next year as well.
She's committing to next year as well. Otherwise, she has to come back home and live and work, and we'll have to put her behind the mic to earn some money.
Look, we need the help.
So this is going to be a fun show this morning. It is another one of those. The entire show is dedicated to this Atlanta's Best Connectors, three people who have been nominated as one of Atlanta's Best Connectors. And as I always do, I'll leave it to you to redefine, if you will, for our listeners, how this whole thing came about and what we're trying to accomplish through this series.
Sure. The Connector series happened kind of accidentally, as things are wont to do here in the studio. We put out a blast on LinkedIn one time, and we said, hey, anybody know any connectors in town? And we expected to have, you know, a couple, two, three, five. And we had close to 100 nominees of connectors in the city in a variety of different verticals. And so we've been just trying our darndest to get them through the studio to give them their spotlight.
And since that time, a lot of folks have been coming through here with nice dresses, sport coats, ties. It's a whole different
exactly.
demographic. I mean,
I've noticed that.
I know it's different for us, but we're going to make the adjustment, I think.
You are.
So first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the president of Breakthrough Business Technologies, a gentleman who is no stranger to the studio. He's at least been in the Alpharetta studio, I believe, before. Welcome
That's
back
right.
to this circus, Mr. Jack Shaw.
Thank you, Stone.
We're delighted to have you, man. Breakthrough Business Technologies, what's that all about? What are you out there doing for folks?
Well, basically, I work with technology solution providers and help them educate their target markets about the business value of their solutions. People don't like to buy technology if they don't understand how it's going to help them. And rather than restrict themselves to the 10 or 15% of the folks out there who already get any given new technology, I help them get the message out to the rest of the market.
But that's your niche, just technology. So what would be an example of a client or two that you serve?
Dynasys here in town. Over the course of the last year, I've put together a whole series of educational videos on cloud computing to help their clients and prospects understand the benefits of cloud computing and thereby help Dynasys deliver the cloud computing services that they provide for their small and mid-sized business marketplace.
Now, so you think this cloud computing is going to stick around?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of people think it's not quite so tangible, but I actually got a picture of cloud just over the weekend.
Of the cloud?
I got a picture over the weekend, and it's going to be on my blog later today, as a matter of fact.
So that's a teaser for the listeners.
So as a little bit of a primer, what would you characterize as the key advantages of working with and through the cloud?
Well, from a technology perspective, the cloud functions at several different levels. You've got infrastructure services that are available in a cloud, where a company like Dynasys, for example, can go to its small and mid-sized client target market and offer to relocate their IT operations off-site to a very secure, highly robust site that's going to be better both for them and for their clients and their clients' customers to interact with. You also have software as a service available in the cloud, and that's what most consumers are a little more familiar with, things like Salesforce.com or using Dropbox or other services for backups and file transfers, that kind of thing. So that's when there's companies that are delivering application software capabilities that are based in the cloud or on the Internet.
Now, since Dynasys is your client, how do you work with them? Like, you're a technology expert. You've been involved in technology for a big chunk of your career, right?
For many years, right.
And so you don't just do video for people. That's not what you're value proposition to your clients are, right?
No, there are certainly excellent video production houses in town, and I work with one of them myself as a primary subcontractor. But what it's really more about is the messaging to the marketplace. So I help them with their messaging, their positioning, how do they get the word out to that part of the target market that doesn't yet recognize the value of the kinds of solutions that they offer.
But are you doing it as a connector? Are you saying that I'm going to be sharing my Rolodex with you? That's part of what you're getting when you work with me?
That occasionally is the case, but as a connector, both in terms of interacting in person or via social media,
right,
with my network of connections, it's more a matter of individually helping get the word out. I have, whether I'm writing a white paper for a client, or
like
doing
on
a
behalf
video,
of the client. Do you do it on behalf, or are you kind of ghostwriting it for them and they put their name on it?
It can go either way, depending on what the client's needs are.
Mm-hmm.
Most often, though, I'm writing on behalf of the client, so that I'm, in essence, putting my imprimatur, my reputation in the marketplace behind not specifically the client's particular products or services. I'm not out there to sell their service directly to their prospects. What I do is I help their target market understand why they need that kind of service and kind of open up their minds to, oh, gosh, now I see why I would like to be able to use intelligent decision management technologies, for example, another client that I'm currently working on a project with.
So your white paper may be on cloud computing in general.
Exactly. In other words, it's not
like Dynasys has the best cloud computing solution.
Right. The people at Dynasys are perfectly capable of showing why their solution
right.
is a better fit for a particular client's needs than some alternative.
Right.
But it's not just cloud computing. The thing that's exciting about this is there's a whole range of breakthrough technologies that are emerging, hence the name of my company. So you have things like intelligent systems technologies, like IBM's Watson that won the Jeopardy Challenge last year, mobile commerce, social media, of course, data analytics. All of these areas are areas that are rapidly growing. People are trying to understand, and until they do, they're not ready to spend money. But at the same time, until they do, the vendors, they kind of look at them a little bit skeptically because they assume the vendors are trying to sell them a bill of goods until they really understand why they would need that.
Right.
So this Rolodex question, though, to me is a very interesting one because it's just not sustainable, right? You hire the guy with the gold Rolodex and bring them in. That doesn't last, right?
I agree, and it's limited. I do make a lot of introductions, but, if they're hiring a vice president of, if any technology provider is hiring a vice president of sales to come in and head up sales in a particular industry vertical, and that person has been working in that vertical marketplace for many years and is well connected with many of the companies that are in that company's target market, well, then you can say, yeah, their Rolodex is of value. In my case, I leverage the Rolodex for two types of things. One, for making connections for my business, and secondly, to help make introductions. So when I do work with a client, I'm not likely to walk in and say, here's 20 prospects that you're going to get in the first 3 days you work with me. But over the course of working together for several months, I may make two or three strategic introductions that can be of value for them as prospects or potential partners, that type of thing.
And then are you calling that, how are you choosing those opportunities? Like you're looking for like the perfect fit?
Generally, it comes...
Because like at first when you engage with somebody, you know X about them, but over 3 months later,
right.
5X or 6X, so then you're better able to kind of be that matchmaker.
Exactly. I get to understand a particular company's business model and needs and where they fit in the marketplace much more effectively. And that then puts me in a situation that when I come across something and I say, here's some synergy between company X's business model and company Y's business model. And if they don't already know each other, maybe they ought to be talking about opportunities to do some things together. So it typically is more along those lines.
So it's a deeper kind of relationship you're trying to build rather than kind of dump your Rolodex on somebody the first week that you engage with them.
Exactly. Right.
Right.
Now, are you playing in the startup community at all? Are you bouncing around there much?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am doing that. And one of the companies I'm talking with at the moment is a startup. But they're a startup in a field that I have a great deal of expertise in. And so there are a variety of ways that we are in exploration about this. And other companies that I've worked with in the past that are startups, similarly, one of the challenges for startups is if you're going to deliver a technology solution that is really differentiated from what's out there before and is really going to add value for your clients or your prospective clients, then they have to understand how it is that it's different. And for the most part, you can't deliver that kind of a solution unless you are leveraging some new technology, emerging technology, or combination of technologies. Otherwise, what is it that makes it better or different from what's already out there? And that's where the challenge is, because if the market doesn't already understand, and 80% of the market doesn't, why those technologies are useful for them.
Well, and I would think that
it's tough.
That really brilliant kid, and my image of this is Sheldon on Big Bang Theory on television. Right. I would think that while Sheldon might be able to write the code and create this marvelous technology, probably less adept than you are in getting the message articulated properly and out to the right people in the marketplace.
That
right?
that's a perfect characterization of the situation. That's not always the case, right. Especially with more established companies, but often with those startup businesses, you know, they understand their niche and the business problem and how they can leverage some exciting new technology to address that. But unless they want to restrict themselves to the 5 or 10% of the target market that are the innovators, early adopters, that also are looking for this kind of thing, then they've got to educate their market. And it can be very helpful to bring in a third-party subject matter expert as a neutral party to say, hey, here's why this kind of technology really has value, and you ought to be taking a look at it.
Now, how does kind of nonprofits and associations and giving back to the community play into this equation?
Well, I'm involved in a couple of different organizations fairly deeply in terms of, you know, regular activities and attend others from time to time. I think it's important. You've got to get out. You know, I probably go to 3 or 4 meetings a month mm-hmm. of various different not-for-profits kinds of organizations.
Are they trade associations or are they more charities?
I tend toward, well, a combination of those things, networking groups and trade associations primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel like I'm doing charity work, but for example, I'm on the board of directors of the Technology Association of Georgia's Smart Energy Society.
Right.
Recently changed its name from the Smart Grid Society to the Smart Energy Society. Now, I'd like to think that I've brought a ton of business in my door as a result of that, but it's not the case. I've been involved with this for about 3 years, and mostly it's been pro bono work to help educate the Georgia marketplace about the benefits of smart energy and the smart grid. What are these things and how can they be beneficial? I think that the connections that I make there and the people I have a chance to interact with, you know, ultimately there will be some opportunities to grow my business. But I'm also looking at it as a way to kind of help give back to the business and technology community in terms of something that's got some great potential for Georgia in the long term.
And is that the kind of the mindset that you would recommend people that are getting involved in those kind of groups to have? Like maybe not look at it as a direct path to money, but to just kind of give back to the community that serves you?
Well, I think you can do a combination of those things. I think if you're strictly thinking in terms of every time you go to a meeting,
right, you're gonna get
how
a
am I
going
to cash in as a result of right. of attending this specific meeting, then you're looking at it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
If you're thinking at it in terms, I go to many tag meetings.
And there's no shortage of those.
There's no shortage of meetings.
Those every week.
Of tag, right. And yet still only 1% of those that they hold. But I go to probably, in addition to the smart grid meetings that I have once or twice a month, I go to another 1 or 2 tag meetings. I'm a member of the Kettering Executive Network. And you never can tell. Through the Kettering Executive Network, I found out that there was a professor at at Kennesaw State that was looking for experienced consultants to come in and speak to an MBA course on the consulting business that these two professors were conducting. And so I raised my hand and said, you know, fine, I'll come in and talk to the group. My only expectation was that it would be interesting to see what kinds of questions come up. But after the class, somebody came up and said, hey, we're trying to do this in our business. Is this the kind of thing you could help with? And I said, yeah, and now we're in the final stages of discussion of a potential contract. Now, it may or may not develop that way, as it turns out, but, you know, it's looking very encouraging. I didn't accept the offer to speak at Kennesaw State because I thought, I'll bet there's going to be an opportunity for me to get a consulting gig out of this deal. It just, you know, it wasn't like that.
Now, you do a lot of live networking, so you're hopping in the car, driving across town, eating the rubber chicken, throwing down the glass of wine or whatever. Do you blend that with technology or using the social media platforms and technology to help you in your networking?
Yeah, I think that those two are a really logical fit because, you know, I've been on LinkedIn for 8 years now. So I was like one of the first 100,000 on LinkedIn and they got 100 million now or something like that. Now, unlike some people who have got, you know, 50,000 connections or whatever, I've got about 1,500 direct connections. And I would say I probably actually know about 80% of those people.
Wow.
You know, every now and then, if anybody who's been on LinkedIn for a while knows, you end up with some connections and you'd say, where the heck did I meet that person? I can't recall who they are. So I find that to be extremely helpful and it augments the situation. So if I meet somebody and we have a conversation, we say, you know, let's follow up and have a cup of coffee or let's get together with a sandwich. Well, one of the first things I'll do is I'll connect with them on LinkedIn, see who else they're connected with. If nothing else, it always helps to be able to say, oh, I see you know so-and-so, or you used to work in such-and-such. I'll bet you know so-and-so, and it helps establish rapport. But on down the road, it also can be extremely helpful. In fact, I learned about Dynasys through a billboard advertisement that they had. And
a billboard, like great big billboard off
billboard.
The interstate?
Dynasys is a local company.
Uh-huh.
And most of their clients are local, and so they actually do some billboard advertising as part of their marketing. It wouldn't make sense for all but the largest companies if you were national or international in scope. But with most of their target market right here, it's not a bad thing to do. And they'd been under my radar. Dynasys has got about, I think, 75, 80 employees. It's a fair-sized company, but it was not one I was previously familiar with. So I went into LinkedIn, and I found out that the CEO of Dynasys was somebody who was connected to several people that I knew. So I reached out to three of those folks, and one of them said, well, I don't really know the guy. And the other one, second one actually didn't even respond to me. But the third person wrote a very nice introductory note to the CEO of Dynasys and said, hey, I know Jack Shaw. He's a guy you ought to chat with. He might be able to help you out. And I followed up with an email note, and then nothing happened for 6 weeks. But then I got a call from him, and he said, hey, we've been thinking about putting together some educational videos. Can we get together and talk about this? And we did, and we proceeded to put together a whole series of videos, you know, over the course of the past year along those lines. So to me, that's a classic example of how networking. Now, the fellow that introduced us was somebody that I had met personally through interpersonal networking.
Uh-huh.
So a combination of the interpersonal networking and the social media of LinkedIn in this particular case did, over time, end up developing a business opportunity for me.
And so over time, do you get some economies of scale where you can, I don't know what the right, cross-fertilize, or you get one contact, but, you know, maybe they're really good for more than one person. Can you do that? And if so, how do you do it without, overindulging or wearing that contact out?
Well, you're right. And I think the thing is you've got to be selective in how you interact with the individuals you work with. I find LinkedIn groups to be a good way to keep people posted on what's going on. So I've probably had a dozen occasions over the course of the last 4 or 5 months where I've bumped into somebody that I knew previously at some kind of business or networking event of some kind, got to chatting, you know, ask them, what have you been up to lately? And And they say, you know, what have you been up to lately? And I say, well, I've been working on several different kinds of things. And one of the things I'm really excited about is this series of educational videos on cloud computing that I did for Dynasys. Oh, yeah, I saw those. Now, we would have to spend more time than it was probably worth to try to figure out which one of 50 different LinkedIn right. groups that I belong to that they also belong to and happen to see a posting saying, if you're interested in information on cloud computing, here it is. But through that combination of disseminating it, sending out tweets, you know, I have a few hundred followers on Tweet.
He's
you know.
A tweeter.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm, you know, I'm not up there with, you know, Lady Gaga or anybody like that. But you know, and I think it's a matter of, you know, keeping your website and your blog updated, interacting on a regular basis with social media, getting out there and in person and meeting people, and just kind of keeping all of those going on a low key.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Well, it is, and it's a balancing act. You know, I think it's part of your marketing activity, you know, so I think if you've got to figure you're going to be spending, you know, 5 or 10% of your time, that's, you know, you got to spend 3 or 4 hours a week doing that, either getting out and talking to people or updating your site, sending out tweets, posting new blogs.
Or engaging someone like Jack Shaw.
I recommend it.
All right. How can our listeners get in touch with you and have a conversation about that very topic?
Well, check out my website. My website address is ecom.com. That's spelled with a hyphen, ecom.com. Or drop me an email, jack@ecom.com.
Terrific. Well, thanks so much for coming down this morning and visiting with us.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, very informative. We got to have you come back. Might be fun to have you bring a client sometime.
And yeah, get bring the Dynasys folks.
Yeah, that could be a great fun conversation.
I'll touch base with him tomorrow and see if he's interested.
Cool.
I'm sure he would be.
How about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Be delighted to.
All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is a lady with the National Association of Women-Owned Small Businesses. Her name is Tammy Bailey Fultz. Welcome to the show, Tammy.
And thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here this morning.
We are delighted to have you. So did you learn anything out of the last interview?
Absolutely, and found a lot of similarities as well. So really good to meet Jack.
So tell us a little bit about is there a cool way to say this, NAWASBA?
I know, it really is. No. You know, we go back and forth trying to figure out what's the, you know, right way to really say that. But in terms of National Association of Women-Owned Small Businesses, NAWASB, however you want to shorten it there.
If you listen to Stone, he'll say to make it into a word, that's his go-to move.
Right. I'll help you build an acrostic out of it.
I would love that. Great. Fantastic. Yeah, but we're a national nonprofit organization and established October 2010. And we actually have been working throughout Metro Atlanta and Georgia. But we are national, and we are a membership-based association. So we have members that are throughout the United States. Of course, we have several members that are on the West Coast and East Coast. But again, primarily in Atlanta. And our mission is educating women-owned small businesses about federal government contracting. And we absolutely love what we do. And while we say we are women-owned small businesses, we are by no means for women only, meaning that women are 51% or better owners of the corporation, of their small businesses. And, of course, their spouses, their male partners, and anyone else that they wish to bring along are a part of the association as well.
Now, why should a woman-owned or any company care about working with the government?
Well, there are so many opportunities, and given the times in which we are now economically, you know, people are always looking for the next level. What's the next greatest thing? And the federal government has actually been there all alone. As the world's largest consumer, it only makes sense that people would be engaged. And so for women in particular, as well as other minorities, and anyone with any type of status in which you can use to your advantage, we by all means want to play that up. And so the government is definitely in the market always to support those various groups. And they're known as what they call as set-aside opportunities. And so for women, they get to use that status. If there are veterans out there, they can use that status. And there are other statuses in which you can use those for federal government opportunities.
And so those kinds of organizations will get preferential treatment, everything else being equal. If Lee and I go after a contract and we're not a women-owned business, although I'm certainly willing to reconsider it, and a woman-owned business goes after it, everything else being equal, a woman-owned business will get preferential treatment in some respects?
Well, it depends. The government will specify and put in a particular contract, what we say is contract, but actually the formal terminology is solicitation, and putting that information before the general public, the government may choose, the contracting officer may choose to have it set aside for a particular group. And that particular group can be woman-owned business. It can be a veteran-owned business. So the government determines, the federal government, the contracting officer, the agency determines, you know, which group they would like to.
Short and fat, is that a category that you ever seen?
Yeah, obese.
We haven't worked to that yet.
It's coming.
I'm just trying to find my niche.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. We all are. But this is the latest certification, and one in which really got our organization kind of jump-started everything for us. February of last year, exactly, just 1 year ago, the federal government specifically made this particular certification. It's called Economically Disadvantaged Woman-Owned Small Business Certification, or known as 8M. And SBA, it is a certification in which a woman-owned company can go in and self-certify, place and get in all of their documents. And when we talk about certifications, you kind of think of it in terms of like degrees. So, you know, there once was, if you go to school, the more degrees that you would get, the more opportunities career-wise that you can go after. So you think of certifications similar to that. The more certifications that you may have, the more opportunities or more contracts that you may be able to go after within the federal government. So this woman-owned small business certification is just one of those certifications that you may get. And in doing so, it allows you to go after some other contracts. And then you can go after general ones, and any business can, of course, if you're registered with the government to do business. But having additional certifications can definitely give you some more opportunities within federal government.
Now, how did you learn how to navigate through the maze of government contracts?
You must be an incredibly patient woman.
It is a feat within itself, and so that's the reason for having the association, because many people really are trying to decide, you know, how do you go through that maze? It's a little crazy, and being that it is all on the World Wide Web, and so you get it tangled in and you start reading information and wondering which direction, how to go through this entire map. And so that's what we're here for. The association, part of that is to help by providing services, coaching services, support services to help our clients, our members, those who choose to go down this path, to give them some direction so that they're just not out there reading information, because the terminology is totally different as well. And, you know, listen to Jack and talk about, you know, the cloud and all. It's the same thing in terms of federal government. And so we say governance is the new language. And my partner and I, we with Government Contractors Association. And so we teach governance, which is different terminology, in helping people understand how to work with the federal government.
Now, are there types of businesses that really lend themselves to getting government solicitations? See, I'm learning.
You
I'm educable.
Are. You're excellent. Fantastic. Great.
I was going to say contracts.
No, you're good. You're good. No, actually, there are some that are more, but honestly, it can be really any industry. And there are ones that traditionally people tend to go more to and say, oh, because you're in IT or construction or manufacturing. Those are kind of the obvious ones. And certainly those are ones in which there are large opportunities, and large meaning million, multi-million dollar contracts, multi-year contracts. But there's an opportunity in almost every industry. And again, because we are talking about the world's largest consumer, and so at every level, anyone involved in business, whether you're the actual prime or the subcontractor, but there's almost opportunity for everyone regardless of industry.
Now, when you're filling out all the forms to kind of put your hat into the ring for this, is this something that you have to be exactly right, or can you just be kind of close and then they just want to explore opportunities, or do you have to hit them exactly what they're looking for?
No, you really need to hit it exactly what they're looking for. The government
it's all or nothing, right?
It's right. The government is very specific when they're putting this information out. The government will tell you exactly what it is that they're looking for, and they are very specific, time, date stamped, all of that, location, and so it's no guesswork. pretty much you really have an outline. And if you can deliver the specs in terms of the pricing, that's usually the challenge for most people going in. A lot of times we have to talk to our members and our clients to say, okay, you don't want to, on your first opportunity out the gate, to just try to make this your windfall for life. Meaning that it's not the lottery. Mm-hmm. And so you want to, you want to be paid, but you have other things that you have to pay, other people you have to pay, particularly if you have to sub the workout. And so you have to be fair. And so we help with that process.
Now, once you've gotten one under your belt, is it easier to get the next one? Is the first one the hardest one?
First one is usually the hardest one, of course, because you're trying to understand, you're trying to maneuver. There are registrations, there are a number of things, processes that you have to go through. But certainly after you obtain your first, you then have established a relationship with the contracting officer, the agency and the officer who has actually awarded the contract to you. And because we know that you haven't been trained well with us, that you have performed a great job, and therefore you're more than likely to may even be contacted later by that same contracting officer for another opportunity.
Now, when you were first attempting this, did you hit it out of the park on your first try, or did it take several tries to get that first one?
It definitely takes more than one try. And typically, some people will become a little frustrated. It is not a quick process by any means. It is one in which it requires proposal writing, requires bidding. There is a process to it. And so it's not an overnight type of thing that you go through.
Like, how much time did it take you that first go round? You decided, what was the first thing that you tried for?
She started when she was 12.
No, not 12. Well, actually, what we do, and with even with our clients and all, and what we work with, we first identify some of the areas. Most people go in and say, this is what I do in terms of my business. This is my core business. And so they go down that path of looking for an opportunity. And that's fine. Say if you're in the cleaning business, commercial cleaning, and so we put in, okay, cleaning, janitorial services, and then you see some opportunities. Well, with that, then as you start looking, you realize there's a lot out there. We're here in Atlanta. And then if someone is looking at something in another state and they realize, I don't know if I can actually do that work in South Carolina somewhere. Are there any opportunities in Georgia? And so you have to keep going back and searching and refining it to get to exactly what you want, because as you move farther away from where you are, then there's additional costs associated with it. And so you have to pass that cost on to the government. Again, you're trying to win this opportunity, and you want to keep your costs low. And so in keeping your costs low, you want to look at staying to your core as much as possible. You want to make sure that proximity to where you're located, all of those things are factors that play a part in your pricing. And so it may take a minute before you really get it. And then that's just pulling the pieces together. And then, of course, you have the actual proposal writing that you have to do. If you personally want to write your own proposal, you can. Most people feel like they're not in a position to do that, and so they have to hire someone, or they may have someone on their team who's good, who's someone who says, I used to do grants, which is totally different. But the government is pretty good when they're putting these solicitations out, so that they give you enough criteria and enough information there to tell you exactly the format that they'd like to have the proposal written in. And proposals, not to scare anyone, but it can be 30 pages, can be 50 pages, but there's 80 pages. It's not unusual. And, of course, the larger the opportunity, the larger the contract, particularly if you're talking about construction, IT, manufacturing, wastewater treatment, and if you're talking a multi-year contract, it could be quite extensive because you're having to pull in other team members, people to be a part of the team as well, who will actually work on the project.
Now, why do you suppose you were nominated as one of Atlanta's best connectors?
Well, I think part of it has to do with, on a weekly basis, within the organization, we hold weekly meetings throughout Metro Atlanta and beyond. And so every Thursday,
weekly. Wow.
Every Thursday, we go from one end of Atlanta to another. And we love it. We were just in Union City last week. But we've gone as far as Macon, far as Athens, and Gainesville. So we go from one end of Atlanta to another, and primarily holding networking luncheons, dinners, getting together with women-owned companies. They're more than welcome. Again, they bring their spouses, their business partners with them, and we talk to them about just common language in layman's terms so that people are not inundated with the information about federal government, that they're not intimidated, and that they feel comfortable and can ask their questions freely in terms of how do they get involved. And so a number of people will come to those meetings, a lot of them who are already registered to do business with the government, and then they will say to us, well, yeah, I registered years ago. It's just too much information coming in my mail, in my email box. I don't know what to do with all of this, and where do we go from here? And so we follow up and do one-on-one sessions and get back, do the follow-up with them to talk about specifically their business and how they can best navigate.
So how can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more?
Definitely. You can visit our website, and our website is www.naosb.org. Or you can just, the easier part maybe for you, just to give us a call, 678-468-7862.
Terrific. Well, thanks so much for joining us. And as we mentioned this to Jack Shaw a little while ago, and we're going to get Jack on the job of helping you come up with a sexy, like, short name for that, okay? So we'll end this disservices in a little bit. But just as we mentioned to Jack, I think it might be fun to have you come back with a member or two.
And, I would love to.
And get the story from their perspective. You up for that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
That'd be a fun show, wouldn't it, Lee?
Sure.
Yeah, we like women, right?
Absolutely.
Well, that's a good thing.
All right. Well, bringing it home for us this morning for the High Velocity Radio Show is a gentleman who is no stranger to the Business Radio X studios. His name is Jim Beach, and he's with the School for Startups. Welcome back, man.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So what's happening in the startup world these days?
Well, I think we're all sitting around waiting for the election to be over, trying to figure out if we're allowed to hire people or not. We're scared to death. I mean, they're going to change the rules every 2 months. And then they're going to give us a 2-month tax holiday. You know, it takes me longer than 2 months to get my forms adjusted. So I don't know how that's going to benefit me. So the startup world is confused and bewildered, I think, at the moment.
So it's a school for startups. You're actually teaching people how to go about starting up a brand new venture. Am I articulating that properly?
That's right. It started off as a book from McGraw-Hill that we just published last year. And the thesis of the book is, I think, a little bit different for most people talking about entrepreneurship. We don't believe that entrepreneurship has anything to do with creativity, risk, or passion.
Wow.
Everyone in the room's looking at me really crazy, like I'm a crazy man now.
So more accountants. You want more accountants.
But, you know, when you, redefine it and get rid of those three elements, and we can go through them one by one if you want, it becomes possible for anyone to be an entrepreneur, absolutely anyone. And I can give you a business today that you could go start with zero money. You could start it by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That doesn't take risk. That's not creative, and you're not going to have a passion for it. But it's still a business that produces revenue. It keeps you in a house. It keeps your mortgage and your car payments up to date, which is all I care about. So, yes, the answer is it's a online school. The book is sort of the introduction. And then after that, it's 60 hours of online videos, starting with everything you need to know, from, you know, how to get an idea in the first place, how to find your first customers, how to sell the business in the end, how to start a business with no money. We're absolutely obsessed with zero risk. I don't believe in taking risk at all. I think a big investment for a new business is $5,000. I won't go past that ever. So, that's what it is, Online Learning Center.
Cool. So now I asked Jack this earlier too. Do you hang out in the startup community? You know, Lee and I and some more of our team, we were at this startup riot down at the Tabernacle, and it was a lot of fun. We interviewed all these kids. They were wide-eyed. Do you hang out with those folks and try to give them some counsel? Or do you play in that world at all?
I'm in the world a lot. I'm actually the education guy at the Atlanta Metro Chamber downtown, and so when they have an event for small business, I'm usually the one, well, along with Chris Hanks, the entrepreneur guy up at UGA. Together, we're the ones that do all of the small business education for the chamber. So a lot of those people that you saw had gone through our how to give a presentation program, how to have a good value pitch program. The next series we're doing is how to get on the radio for free and have something interesting to say program. So, you know, we do a lot of work down at the chamber with the young companies, the companies that are just trying to get off the ground. Yes.
Now, what are some mistakes you see them making?
You know, the first thing is they're spending a whole lot of time not selling stuff. You know, I just want to see you sell stuff. I had someone come in the other day, and they were so proud that they had spent 6 months getting their business plan ready, and it was now done for 6 months. And I was like, why didn't you go sell in month or day two? You know, in day two, try to go sell something. You know, I can understand doing the business plan. I can understand the research behind it. I'm not a big fan of the writing of the business plan because I'd rather be out there selling, Lee. I think that you're better spent in the marketplace perfecting your pitch and learning why your customers are or not buying your particular product.
Even if, because a lot of these companies were kind of theoretical companies. You know, they had an idea for a company. They weren't quite ready to sell.
Well, you know, that's not my space. I don't believe in that. Those are what, you know, the advanced entrepreneurs. The thing that we're trying to do is get the person on off the sofa who wants to be an entrepreneur, but I can't do it right now. My kids are about to go to school. I can't take the risk right now. Ooh, I don't have any creativity. I don't have an original idea. When I get that creativity lightning bolt, I will start. So we're not talking about the people who will go start a cell phone company. We're talking about the people who start a cheesecake catering company, or the someone whose goal is to make $50,000 a year, and, you know, and get off the unemployment list, or to replace some a job that they don't like, you know, to get some extra freedom. So, you know, our market's a little bit more downscale than right. that. We're just trying to get people employed who currently, right now, are hating job for the man, or God forbid, unemployed.
Now, so this like a $50,000 a year job or a business that throws off $50,000, that's a huge win for somebody who's going through your program?
Well, you know, that's a huge win for a person. Sure, think about the person who's unemployed. Now they have $50,000 a year to not go bankrupt on.
Right.
I consider that a huge win. We've had businesses that have been multi-million dollar businesses, and the principles are the same and hold true no matter what size business you're wanting to start. But I think the most important thing is just taking these millions of people who want to be entrepreneurs and getting them directed in a little bit different way. They're sitting there going, ooh, if I had my idea, I would act. Well, let's eliminate that. They say, if I had $20,000, I would act. Well, let's eliminate that too. In other words, the only thing left for you to do is act. Yeah.
Just, so err on the side of action.
We believe 100% in acting, right? The worst thing that you can, you know, happen by being out in the marketplace is learning why people don't like your product. Well, you change your pitch. You change your product until it starts selling. You don't do that with a business plan. That business plan is not going to give you that education.
And you don't have to have a passion for cheesecake. You just have to have a passion for not being poor.
That's right. You know, I have done so many different businesses. I have a passion for zero of them. I have a passion for being at my daughter's ballet recital at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. I have a passion for wearing
so
my flip-flops.
So if you can find a thing where someone will pay you to be your daughter's recital, that would be good business for
That's
you.
A great business, Lee. Yes, yes. You know, I just don't care about goods, services, products, things. You know, I don't understand people that do. I'm passionate about going to Disney World with my kids. Anything that I love doing, and I love working, and I love being here, and I love talking about this stuff, I'd still rather be at Disney with my kids. And so when people say, do stuff you're passionate about, I don't get it. I say, do stuff you can make the most money at so you can have more time to do the stuff you're passionate about.
Well, and I would think that that would really lend itself to this idea that I first read in the E-Myth, and you and I talk about a lot. Instead of crafting a job for yourself, building a money machine.
That's
something
right.
That other people are
doing
the
work.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that mentality would really lend itself to genuinely creating a business instead of just buying yourself a job, right?
Right. Well, you know, the first thing you can do is go out in the marketplace, find how to sell the product, you know, start delivering the product, and after you get cash flow positive, which should be very soon because you have no expenses at this point, you're allowed a business card only so far. You know, you're not having a receptionist. You don't have a new Macintosh laptop AirBook. You know, you don't need these things. Once you start selling things, it's easy to teach someone else how to sell because, you know, here's the three words I said that made the sale. once you've learned that, it's easy to, you know, to repeat the pitch. You know, if I can get you to cry with my pitch, and I, you know, for my first business, I could.
You sold onions?
Exactly. It was a cooking Vidalia onion. Cooking.
So what's the backstory on Beach? How did you arrive here and arrive so emphatic? I'm not going to use the word passionate. So emphatic about the way you ought to go about this business of entrepreneurship. What's the backstory?
Well, I was wanting to work at Coca-Cola, and I was working at Coca-Cola Japan, and I put together a deal over there that saved them $1 billion over 7 years. And I was 25, wanting to get married, come back and, you know, marry a little Southern cheerleading type girl. And so I told Coca-Cola I needed to come home. They said, great, go. And I thought I'd get a job here in Atlanta at North Avenue, and no one would hire me. I had a bad reputation, apparently. They said, you should go play by yourself because you don't play well with others. And so I decided to go back and get some more schooling, and started my first business when I was 25, which was a children's technology education business. It's a fancy way of saying summer camps. But the summer camp company within 6 years was doing $15 million in revenue in 39 states and 3 countries with 700 employees, doing lots more than summer camps. We were any way you could teach kids, we were doing that. And sold that in 2001 and started teaching at Georgia State. And when I was there, I had the first semester, I had a big ego when I told the class how easy all this stuff was. And they said, yeah, right. And I was like, well, I'll do it. I'll start a business this semester. And so I made a bet with the class that I could start a business in the next 3 months. It had to be 100% profitable by the end of the 3 months. And they got to choose the country and the industry. They chose Pakistan because this was right after 9/11 and furniture. So I had 3 months to start a Pakistani furniture company. Well, it was very successful. We did it 12 semesters in a row, and that's where the idea for the book came from. This idea that risk is bad. Oh, I left out the part where I did get $10 million in personal debt. Got the letter from the bank saying you and your children should move out of your house, all that stuff. And I decided that I didn't sleep well when I was $10 million in personal debt, that it's not a fun experience. And the businesses that I started with lots of money all failed. And the businesses that I started with no money all succeeded. I think there's a trend there that, you know, especially a trend that it seems to do better when you don't start with money. You make better decisions. And so that's where the book and the Learning Center all came from.
And say more about the book, because I don't think we've talked much about that.
Well, it's sort of the introduction to the philosophy that risk, creativity, and passion are not necessarily part of entrepreneurship. It's got 12 stories in there of average, normal people, quite a few females in there and quite a few minorities in the book, that all of a sudden needed to start a business or wanted to start a business. So there's Tierra Reed. She wanted to start a high-end clothing store, Dolce & Gabbana, that type of thing. And we said, you know, you just don't have the money. So she scaled back her desires and instead started a consignment clothing store that's now doing gangbusters. She's getting paid by other consignment stores as a consultant. It's an amazing story. She started with under $4,000, built out a retail store for under $4,000. It's an amazing story. There's Joey Tatum up in Athens, Georgia, started a bar up there, and I love his value proposition. If you're a college student, you're not welcome here. It's a great value proposition for a college bar. That's where we would want to go. You
right,
know, that's
right.
Where I would want to go. Once you're past 22, that's the bar you would want to go to. He started that bar for under $1,000, and 15 years later, it still has concrete floors, the exposed cinder block walls, the metal rafter ceiling. It's a dump, but it started for very, very cheap. How much beer do you have to sell to recoup a $1,000 investment? Not very much.
Just one afternoon visit.
For you. Your family.
Told you about the fat tire at the top of the show, right? So tell us about this corridor principle.
I love the corridor principle. It's the idea that once you get started, once you get off the sofa, you will see opportunities left and right that you would never have seen if you weren't walking down the hallway of entrepreneurship. So when you're standing at the beginning of a, you know, really long corridor, call it your life, you can't see into the rooms off the left and the right of the hallway. You don't know what's in those rooms. But when you get off the sofa and start walking down this pathway, all of a sudden you can see in the room to the right. And you know what? Well, I can teach kids. I'm really good at computer education. Oh, well, you want me to do online computer? Sure, we can do all sorts of new things just present themselves. And so when you talk about creativity and entrepreneurship, entrepreneurs will tell you that creativity is the easiest part, that there's a billion ideas out there. There's no lack of ideas. And so when you go down the path, you start seeing all of these ideas. Again, I don't think creativity's got anything to do with entrepreneurship. And a serial entrepreneur, someone who's been down the pathway, will tell you the third idea, the eighth idea, all came because of something that I did by getting off the sofa 8 years ago.
Well, you've certainly given me a different view on this whole thing and encouraging me to look through this whole thing through a very different prism. Do you agree with that, Lee? It's a different lens, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely perfect message for this time.
Exactly. It's, I think, really encouraging because it says anyone can do this. Absolutely anyone can be an entrepreneur. Can I give away a free business idea now?
Absolutely.
I love this.
It can't
this
be the same one you gave before. I'm not going to call you on it.
Which one was that before?
I'm not telling you.
Oh, come on. Tell him so that he... So
yeah, don't embarrass me. I got 40 I can give away. Yeah.
You gave the one that said, if you're a kid right now...
The restaurants?
You can go
in there and
do the
social media.
Okay. That I still believe in that idea. I can give you 10 references now of people that
no,
are
we
actually...
No, we thought it was so great. We share it with people all the time. We act like it was ours. We don't credit anyone.
Okay, you out of that. Because creativity is not important. Remember that.
That's right. That's I believe steal, borrow, or beg. Yes, I'm a big fan. And I don't care if you give me credit. All I want is people to go out there and start that business. Another one then. What about going to hospitals and walking up and down the aisles of the hospital and saying, you know, I will do things for you here in the hospital. I will take care of your things at home. Do you have something at home that you forgot to do? Or I'll massage your feet, or I'll go get you flowers, or I'll go buy you a book. Just be a person in the hospital that goes and takes care of people for, you know, and says, I actually like this business again for kids. I'll segue for a second. My 14-year-old started a neighborhood business. He calls it a neighborhood business, and they do anything in the neighborhood. And the one rule is they will not charge you for any service. They'll mow your lawn for free. They'll wash your car for free. They'll walk your dogs for free. However, they accept contributions. People will pay three times more when you don't tell them how much it costs.
That's great.
So and they call it contribution? That wasn't an accidental word choice, was it?
Well, you know, he just got back from Washington, D.C. on the eighth grade school trip, so he was raising money for that. They're always raising money for something, and so it's a contribution to my band program, my school trip.
But it's to his Xbox fund.
It could be. You know, it could be a contribution to his Porsche fund or his college fund. You know, they don't know. All they know is that the kid came up and said, I'd like to mow your lawn. I'm not going to charge you. You can pay me. You can tip me whatever you want.
Right.
It's a powerful thing to say to
Does he do it every week for a homeowner for tips?
He does it, you know, year round. This is his ongoing thing.
Wow.
So very, very impressed with him. But still, back to the hospital business. I think if you went up, because I'm a hospital patient from time to time, and I know what the people there are going through. You sit around for hours waiting for a nurse to bring you a bottle of water. You know, your spouse will be there at 5. It's 2, and you're thirsty, or you need to go to the bathroom or something. And the nurses come once every 5 hours or something. If I would pay handedly for a service like that. Or flip it. Say you want to go to 5 florists and say, I'll deliver all your flowers for you to this hospital and do something like that. I just think there's lots of little creative ways that you can find businesses. And, you know, if you don't like that, go on Google and type in free business idea. There's only like 400 million links there. So, again, creativity is not part of it.
It's a ton of ideas that people never acted on.
Right, but I think it's the mindset, though, right? Isn't it? You're changing your mindset from I'm waiting for someone to choose me, to pick me and give me a job or give me an opportunity, and you're saying just do something.
Get off the sofa.
Just do something.
Get off the sofa.
That has the potential to turn into money, and just do it for a while and learn and tweak it until it turns into money, and if it doesn't, move on to something else.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, go out and sell it for a month. And if you can't sell it, you know, move on. Find something you can sell.
Right.
If you can't sell foot massages at the hospital, try selling hamburger delivery, you know, because the food there's not so good either.
But while you're asking people for foot massages, they could say, you know what, I don't want any foot massages, but if you can bring me some Sudoku magazines, I'd really love that.
Or if you would go home and check on my pet and make sure the oven's not on.
Right.
You know, just whatever they need.
But you would learn, though, by doing. You wouldn't learn by theorizing
exactly.
In some business plan.
Right. Go ask them what they're willing to pay for.
Right.
You know, don't say, here are the three things I'm willing to do.
Right.
Say, what are you willing to pay for?
Right.
I love that. UnplugTheIron.com, because I know every time we go on a trip, You know, we get like 3 miles down the road. I wonder if we unplug the iron. That could be like a whole business just and hook up with the travel agencies, right?
What's an iron? Some of us have iron-free clothing. They've invented this cool stuff called polyester stone.
What an inspiring conversation. What's the best way for our listeners to learn more and reach out and connect with you?
Well, schoolforstartups.com is the entire learning center. Of course, you go to Amazon and pick up the book or Barnes & Noble's. My email address is james.beach, B-E-A-C-H, at att.net, james.beach at att.net. And I actually answer that myself. I'm at Entrepreneur Jim on Twitter. I also tweet. And I would love to connect with you and talk about how to start a business for no money with no ideas. And I'll tell you the restaurant idea that they won't let me talk about now, offline later, if you email me.
That's great. Thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us, man.
I love it. Thanks a lot for having me.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Jack Shaw, Tammy Bailey Fultz, and Mr. Jim Beach, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.